This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, November 22, 2012. Nathaniel Yeager has been convicted of second-degree murder in the death of his wife, Melinda. The Montrose Daily Press reports that after 3 weeks of trial, a jury took about 2 hours to find Nathan Yeager guilty of murdering his estranged wife, Melinda Tackett Yeager, on Tuesday. The press reports that jurors rejected Yeager's argument that Tackett Yeager had provoked him into a heat of passion so great as to override reason when he chased her down and slit her throat in January of 2011. They found him guilty of second-degree murder without the mitigating factor of heat of passion, which would have reduced the crime from a second-class felony to a third-class felony. Yeager had claimed insanity. But the press report said on Friday it was determined that the standards for that defense had not been met. So on Tuesday, the jury was instructed not to make a finding as to sanity. According to the press, defense attorney Stephen Schweissing contended Tackett Yeager had concocted a plan with her friends. She would encounter Yeager and incite him to break her nose, thereby getting what she wanted out of their divorce and custody battle. She did not intend to be killed, but did provoke Yeager. District Attorney Dan Hotzenpiller called that line of attack victim bashing. The press reports that Yeager's brief marriage had imploded soon after their daughter was born and, according to the testimony of one expert, their divorce was bitter. Once again, the North Fork Valley is back on the table for oil and gas development. Despite months of widespread opposition from the community, on Friday, the Bureau of Land Management announced that it plans to offer about 21,000 acres for sale near Paonia, Hotchkiss, and Crawford in February. KVNF's Arianna Brocious reports on the new proposal.
Ty Gillespie owns Azura Cellars and Gallery, which offers stellar views of the mountains from its perch just above the town of Paonia.
And out here, this is one of the, I guess, the main reasons people come to visit us. We have a spectacular view of the valley. And there are parcels essentially all over here. We could be seeing wells and traffic that we haven't had any experience with yet.
Gillespie also worries that the oil and gas activity could ruin the water they use to make wine. The boundary of one parcel is less than 100 yards from the entrance to his winery.
We've really put our heart and soul into this place, and if it ends up in the middle of an industrial zone, I don't see that it's going to have any value, and our business certainly can't exist.
This is the second time this year Gillespie and many North Fork Valley residents have had to face the potential of large-scale oil and gas development in their backyards. Nearly 30,000 acres were proposed for leasing last December, but were deferred earlier this year. Now, two-thirds of the leases are back up for sale in February. The announcement surprised many who thought the proposal had been shelved indefinitely in response to local opposition. Jim Ramey is director of Citizens for a Healthy Community, one of the local conservation groups that has been opposing the leases since last year.
In short, it's just incredibly disappointing that the agency is moving ahead with this, and especially so the week of Thanksgiving.
Ramey says the community still has a strong argument to fight the leases.
This is still based on a land use plan that is 2.5 decades old. It does not make any sense to move forward with even considering leasing any of these parcels at this point in time.
The agency's first revision of that land use plan is expected in April, 2 months after the scheduled sale. Many in the conservation community are urging the BLM to wait until they finish that plan before considering these leases. But BLM spokeswoman Vanessa Lacayo says the agency can't afford to wait on all such decisions. And she says that the 280-page environmental review released along with the announcement takes into account land use change in the valley and the nearly 3,000 public comments they received this year.
As we worked through those comments, as we worked through the site-specific analysis of the different parcels, we felt, the third that we dropped from what was originally offered and what we're now offering was sufficient to address those concerns.
While many of the proposed leases lie next to or near water supplies, schools, organic farms, and homes, Lacayo says the BLM took all of those into account in their updated analysis.
Two of the parcels that we dropped in their entirety were due to, delineated public water supply area, which was obviously not there when we went in initially.
Lacayo says removing some parcels, like that on the popular recreation area of Mount Jumbo, and adding specific restrictions to others, satisfies community concerns.
Through those added conditions of approval and through, you know, the amended acreage, we felt comfortable moving forward with those acres and making them available for lease.
But Jim Ramey says the BLM's environmental justification is inconsistent, removing some parcels on the basis of potentially negative impacts from oil and gas, but leaving others, like the ones next to Ty Gillespie's winery.
What they've done is very contradictory. They've noted elsewhere in the document that drilling for oil and gas could have significant environmental effects and effects on the socioeconomics, but then they've continued with almost two-thirds of the land that was originally proposed for this, saying that at this stage, it's just a lease. It's a paper transaction and there are no impacts. So I'm not really sure which argument to believe.
And whose argument to believe is what the community will have to decide. On Monday, Delta County's oil and gas expert told the commissioners that the parcels they were most concerned about have been removed. Though the county opposed the first round of leases, he recommends they not oppose this round. Speculation is rife about who nominated the parcels in the first place, but the BLM doesn't reveal that information until 3 days after the sale. A call to an oil and gas industry representative was not returned, but industry experts have expressed doubts about the valley's oil and gas potential. Since Friday, the conservation community has been moving fast. They have a new Facebook group and are petitioning the Obama administration to withdraw the leases. Ramey says his group and others are fired up and ready to go.
To us, the argument still stays the same. You know, this was a bad idea then, it's a bad idea now, and we as a community are going to pull together and we're going to try to stop it.
For Ty Gillespie, oil and gas simply doesn't mix with wine.
There's just so many reasons why this would be devastating for us if it happens.
For KVNF News, I'm Ariana Brocious.
Friday's announcement started a 30-day protest period. Based on the response during the next month, the BLM will choose which of the 20 proposed North Fork leases will ultimately go up for sale. The Colorado BLM state director will make the final decision. Protest period ends December 17th at 4 p.m. For more information about the protest period, visit the BLM's website. Only one Delta County football team in the playoff bracket survived to continue their run for the elusive state title. KVNF's Tammy Meck has the report.
Even without their starting quarterback, the Cedar Ridge Bruins advanced to the 1A state championships after defeating Hotchkiss Saturday 16-12. Dante Markley, a dual-threat quarterback, suffered a minor concussion a week earlier against Monta Vista. Backup quarterback Trent Walker, a 6'5" junior running back, stepped in to play a nearly flawless game. Even though Walker had only thrown 6 passes this season, head coach Brandon Milholland said the only adjustments the Bruins made were to take advantage of Walker's height.
We kind of stuck with what we do. We did put in a 5-receiver set there that we ran a few plays with because Trent can throw the heck out of it. But just a total team effort, offensively, defensively.
Cedar Ridge defeated the Bulldogs by a point in league play and knew they were facing one of the toughest teams in the state.
I mean, all these young men just knew that they had to step up and we knew that we had to play our best to beat Hotchkiss. They're a great team.
Walker connected on 9 of 18 passes for 88 yards and 2 two-point conversions, but gave credit to his teammates for the win and for making his job easy.
I think everybody did a great job, but I think the line is what really won this game for us. They came together and they dominated today.
Hotchkiss suffered a big blow when senior Connor Beard was sidelined with a dislocated shoulder. Beard is the team's leading receiver and a big motivator for the team. Bulldog coach Zach Lemon says the injury was a lot more than a loss of a good player.
It's an emotional letdown. It takes a while to try to bounce back from something like that, and I thought we did a pretty good job, but it was still a major hit.
Running back Carter Wasser ran for 2 Bruin touchdowns, and Walker connected with Cade Wasser on both 2-point conversions. Bulldog quarterback Josh Harden scored late in the first half to leave the Bulldogs trailing 6-8 at halftime, and Jacob Galley put up another 6 points for the Bulldogs late in the third. But on both scores, the Bruins were able to hold Hotchkiss on the 2-point conversion attempts and tipped the score in their favor. Cedar Ridge recovered a Hotchkiss fumble with 4 minutes remaining in the game and maintained control to run out the clock. Those turnovers, including one in the game-opening kickoff, also hurt their game, says Lemon.
We had good field position and a chance to punch it in, and we had a couple key turnovers. Defense played great, did a little bend but don't break, never gave up the big play, really. They were able to just move the ball with their physical play and get just what they needed.
This is the first time since 1992 that Cedar Ridge has earned a shot at the state title. They travel to Buena Vista to face the undefeated Demons this Saturday at 1. Mill Holland hopes to win a championship both for the team and for the Western Slope. But win or lose, he's proud of his team.
This is sweet. This is awesome. We're going to a state championship, you know. But these young men and their attitudes, their character, that speaks highly. That to me is more important than what we've accomplished.
The Delta Panthers also saw their run for a state title dashed in a second-round 35-24 loss to fifth-ranked Pueblo East. The Panthers put up a good fight but couldn't overcome a 28-10 halftime deficit. Quarterback Mitch Whiteside threw for 258 yards and two touchdowns and connected with Ryan Whiteside and Chris Black on touchdown passes. Place kicker Alex Quintero was 2 for 2 in extra points and kicked a first-quarter 30-yard field goal. Under coach Ben Johnson, Delta ends the season with an 8-4 record. For KVNF News, I'm Tammy Meck with your weekly sports report.
The turkeys on dining room tables today are nothing like their counterparts in the wild. After decades of domestication, the birds are bred for their meat and cannot survive outside of farms. By contrast, the wild turkey is an intelligent animal capable of surviving on all kinds of terrain. At one time, the wild turkey was nearly wiped out in Colorado. It took a massive effort to bring the birds back. Aspen Public Radio's Marcy Krivenin explains.
This YouTube video shows hunters decked in camouflage calling wild turkeys, trying to lure them closer. Turkey hunting is popular in Colorado with two hunting seasons, spring and fall. But at one time, there were no rules for hunting these birds, and as a result, their populations plummeted.
Nobody knows exactly how low the population actually went, but estimates have been as low as 30,000 turkeys left nationwide. And the decline, of course, was much due to habitat destruction and unregulated hunting.
That's Ed Gorman, small game manager for Colorado Parks and Wildlife. 30,000 turkeys sounds like a lot, but nowadays 7 million turkeys roam the country. He says wild turkey populations reached an all-time low in the early part of the 20th century.
Turkey recovery in the nation and in Colorado is one of the huge success stories of modern wildlife management.
To get populations up, wildlife officials went to work creating regulations for hunters, creating hunting seasons, and limiting harvests. Groups like the National Wild Turkey Federation, which has 24 chapters in Colorado, trapped and transplanted birds, so their population was spread out, making it easier to thrive. Stan Baker is senior regional biologist for the federation.
In Colorado, like other states across the country, the first thing was to try to restore the wild turkey back into suitable habitat.
In the 1980s, the Federation began to move birds around, bringing them into suitable habitats. A species called the Rio Grande wild turkey was introduced onto Colorado's eastern plains. After the birds were dropped off and let loose at their new homes, wildlife workers continued to maintain and improve habitats. In Colorado, invasive species like Russian olives and tamarisk were removed and native plants nurtured.
In western Colorado, we have seen over the years an encroachment of different species along the river systems, the Colorado River system. And so that's taken away some of the native structure, cottonwoods.
Turkeys roost in cottonwood trees at night, and they like to roam along riverbanks, so thick shrubs make movement a challenge.
Wild turkey's greatest sense is its eyesight, so it has to have the ability to see out, and so they don't like to be confined within those dense stands.
Despite these challenges, the turkeys have survived and greatly thrived.
There's probably not been a time in history when there were more turkeys in Colorado than there are today.
Ed Gorman with Colorado Parks and Wildlife says about 30,000 wild turkeys live in Colorado. Back at the turkey hunt, the hunters mostly stay very quiet, calling the birds intermittently. Turns out these big birds are quick, on the ground and in the sky, making hunting them a challenge.
The thing about wild turkeys is they're extremely wary, incredible eyesight, excellent hearing. I mean, they can hear things that in the woods that you'd never, that a human can't hear. And those things alone, plus some of the habitats that they occupy, can really increase the challenge of hunting one successfully.
Turkey hunting season has closed for the year in Colorado. Most of the turkeys that become Thanksgiving meals come from the grocery store rather than from the wild. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Marcy Krivenin.
Thus concludes the newscast. All of us at KVNF, the volunteers, the board, and staff, are grateful for your membership and support and honored at the opportunity to be of service, and we wish you a safe and happy Thanksgiving. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.